Good morning. Buenos dias. Welcome to East Shore Unitarian Church in Bellevue. We are so grateful that you have chosen to spend the next hour or so with us. Today we welcome back our wonderful guest preacher, C.B. Beale, for part two of Preemptive Radical Inclusion. How inspiring. We are so grateful for C.B.
It is such a blessing to be back among you. This morning, I'm going to talk more specifically about preemptive radical inclusion. And the idea of preemptive radical inclusion is, I think, fairly simple. Those of us who hold any kind of leadership, which I understand to be all of us at different times and in different ways, we have the responsibility to learn, change, and grow to preemptively create radical changes that will include people in our collective movement towards justice and equity. We all choose to get free together. Accessibility is a common example. We don't wait until someone needs some sort of ramp or elevator before we build one. We make physical accessibility and universal design for sight and sound and sense and all sorts of things just part of how we do business. We ensure that people, regardless of their physical accessibility needs, can access spaces and be included among us. In the process, those people, sometimes we people, experience more equity and justice in our ability to move through the world. Preemptive radical inclusion is meant to be a practice and a perspective. And it is necessary to be in authentic relationship with people to make it real and meaningful. But all these big words, I get ahead of myself. Let me tell you a story. Last week, I mentioned that I come from 400 years of English and Scottish New Englanders, people like Harbottle Grim Scott. I just love that. People who cling to offensively radical individualism in the absolute assuredness that our way is the right way and the only way. And Puritans aren't big on feelings or words for feelings. Do you remember mine? I had the three growing up, mad, sad, and what was the other one? Mad. Puritans were not good at noticing their own or other people's feelings or valuing them at all. And those of us who come from Puritan roots, and those of us who come from the more theoretically generic white people, individualistic and perfectionist culture, and those of us who might not come from this culture, but nonetheless swim in its waters, well, this is a really tough time to be us. What with our individualism and not many feeling words, continuing pandemic, attempted overthrow of government in the capital and the completely politicized reaction to it, economic recession, unemployment, continued police violence. Some of us are able to risk acute or long COVID and go maskless, and others of us cannot. Individualism and not many feeling words is not doing us a favor right now. Mad, sad, and what was the other one? I was raised on a farm. Small farm. So my roots were not just Puritan, but I was socialized with cows. And I was socialized and raised with this strong belief in productivity, American exceptionalism, and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. I was raised to think carefully and logically about something. Back then, before they invented the computers and the machines, if a tractor wouldn't start, it had to be a problem with fuel, fire, or air. That's it. It had to be one of those. And once you figured that out, you could fix it. I was raised to know how to think, to believe there was just the one way to approach things. And since I was good at it, the thinking, I would, of course, be right. So many of us were raised to believe our own thoughts and ideas so much that we often don't even notice when we're having an idea instead of remembering a fact. We have a thought, we assume it's true. This is kind of, I think, part of the way our brain tries to keep us at the center of the universe, but it's not helpful. Now, In my own life, relying on my own assessment has led me to some unfortunate circumstances. Yeah. Remember, I told you I would share how I am my very own cautionary tale. Yeah, this is that. When I went to seminary in the mid-80s as a young adult, I was very confident that I knew so much, so much. It was seminary where I first experienced someone who told me they were allergic to gluten. Gluten, I said. Who's allergic to gluten? Humans have been eating wheat as a basic staple for thousands of years. People aren't allergic to staples. This tone of voice and this look on my face, this is disbelieving contempt. But I still didn't know all my feeling words, and I was pretty sure only other people were ever contemptuous. I was just, you know, curious, I thought. I was not able to be present with people and offer them authenticity. Later, someone asked us not to wear perfume because she was allergic to fragrances and scents. Scents? How can you be allergic to scents? Smell is just like smelling. No one's allergic to smelling. Now, I didn't have enough knowledge then to understand that the smell of something is a chemical compound ingested through the nose. And if someone is sensitive to a compound, to a chemical, it can get in through the nose as easily as if you ate it. And I didn't know that in the United States, there's dozens of chemicals used in fragrances that are banned in Europe for dangerousness. I didn't have enough knowledge to understand. But worse, I couldn't simply believe them. I had to substitute my personal experience of no sensitivity to perfume for this woman's lived experience. She told me the truth about her life. And my experience took such priority that I mocked her for it. Subsequently, and possibly as proof of a deity who exists solely to provide me with awkward learning opportunities, I have become a person with celiac disease who can't eat even microscopic bits of gluten. But wait, there's more. Yeah, I'm also a person now who's incredibly sensitive to petroleum products and chemical compounds and, well, also flowers and grass and, well, pretty much nature. You know, lots of things that have been around for 10,000 years. So I've been this person who uses their own reality to judge others. And I called it unfortunate a moment ago, and I can try to find humor in it now and use it as a cautionary tale. But the truth is, my attitude and my behavior were really harmful. I hurt people. I had to learn to believe people when they told me about an experience that I do not share. Just as I've had to learn to believe the emerging consensus of a group when they share their experience of life in this country that was missing from the education and media of my own upbringing. It meant that I had to learn not to believe my thoughts automatically, because I could only think within the framework I had been taught. I had to learn to differentiate ideas from truths, in hypotheses from facts. And I had to learn to notice that what I thought first was usually what I was taught earliest. I told you the last time I was here that as a child, I was considered a gender nonconforming girl, a failed girl. We called it a tomboy. As an adult, it took me a long time to find language, and thank goodness that I can very simply now say I'm non-binary. And I still make mistakes about pronouns sometimes because change is hard. Neural pathways are a real thing. When today's story was written in 1975, Billy Bixby's pronoun was he, but a couple of years ago, Billy let me know that it's they now. And I don't always remember it when I tell the story. Sometimes I misgender Billy, and it's really harmful. It's a little insult that even when unintended is cumulative in someone's life. My job as a Unitarian Universalist is to believe Billy when they tell me who they are And when I make a mistake, to correct it and practice in private so that I don't cause more harm. I don't just learn there's a thing called pronouns that are different. I figure out how to not harm people with my use of the wrong ones. Long before I understood myself as non-binary, I had a UU employee who used they and them as their pronouns. And I practiced, if I was going to see them that day, I practiced in the shower. I practiced in the car every day on the way to work. Adrian is working today. They will want to ask me questions. I want to be respectful of them. I wonder what they have planned for the day. I wonder if they did everything I told them to do before our meeting. Right? It's my job to practice so that I would get it right, or at least notice if I messed up. Neural pathways are a thing, and so is our ability to change them. Pronouns themselves are designed to be unnoticed, so we must choose to make them noticeable. But we live in a world where not everyone corrects themselves or notices they use the wrong pronoun or the wrong name for a person. Some people deny my and Billy's experience. All too often say, non-binary, that's not a thing. I've never heard of it. I can't imagine it. No one's non-binary. There have been women and men for thousands of years. That's it. Where I need people to believe me, to accept my experience in the emerging consensus among gender non-conforming people that there are more than two genders, which we know because of our experience, people instead substitute their personal experience in their judgment. Or maybe they believe it's a thing, but it's not a big thing. Just a little bit of gluten. Well, just the fragrance in my hairspray, but I didn't put on perfume. Just a little bit of misgendering. So the truth is, I've been the person who doesn't believe someone else's experience and substitutes my own. And I am a person who other people don't believe mine. I think it's important that I don't have to bear shame over this. When we know better, we do better, right? But I do need to be intentional about continuing to learn, to know, and do better. For me to be preemptively and radically inclusive of people, I must recognize that they experience their life and their circumstances and society in ways that I could not. Not just in ways I don't, but in ways I couldn't. That old adage, don't judge a person till you've walked a mile in their shoes, that's baloney. I can't. I will never know what it is to be a young Black man pulled over by the police. What I can do is believe the reports and the accounts and the experiences of those who do have those experiences when they share what it's like. This is really complicated. It shouldn't be, but it is, because my brain likes to be right. So I've made the idea, don't believe everything you think, part of my perspective. It means I have to notice when my assumptions and other people's statements don't match up, which we usually notice pretty automatically, right? But then I have to lean first into the discomfort of the possibility that I'm the one that's wrong. Not reach first to someone else to make them prove it, prove your experience, but to reach first to myself to explore, why am I so certain? This is a remarkably humbling practice when I do it right. Preemptive radical inclusion means that we must preemptively seek the emerging consensus of people and groups who are marginalized and oppressed in ways we are not, so that we can prepare ourselves to be radically inclusive. To be willing to engage the stories and experiences of those who are marginalized in ways we bear privilege, and to keep bearing witness and not stop when we come across someone who agrees with what we already thought. But to keep bearing witness, an emerging consensus is always emerging. In this way, we who are cisgender learn about the oppression and experiences of trans people by attending to trans people, We who are white learn about how Black, Indigenous, and people of color experience marginalization and oppression by listening, reading, and reflecting, and regularly checking our automatic thoughts. We UUs sought out emerging consensus when we engaged the white supremacy teach-in some years ago and widening the circle of concern. By collectively engaging the ideas and experiences in the UUA's common read each year. It's not one book or two workshops, but an ongoing series of choices that we make about learning that which was kept from us in our previous or formal learning. We might choose to listen to podcasts and watch documentaries about racism, ableism, homophobia, transphobia, sexism, anti-Semitism, and classism instead of choosing another delightful repeat of Ted Lasso. We might join recovery groups that help us heal from past injuries or the patterns we developed to cope with them. We individually and collectively make decisions to increase our ability to create equity and increase justice. Inclusion is but a doorway to equity and justice and then liberation. Now, some of us have made it this far in our lives believing in pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps. It is still at age 60, however many, one, hard for me to ask for help. Right? That's part of our core challenge. But then there's a pandemic, and we, many of us, began to find out for the first time what it is if the boots are fragile or the straps are missing. We started to realize, some of us, that radical individualism is a myth created and supported by a community of radical individualists who helped each other. Maybe we remember that those Puritans built their structures together and were taught how to farm on North American soil by Indigenous people who willingly shared what they knew, not understanding that the Puritans and other Europeans were taking, not sharing, the land. Maybe we remember that women fed Henry David Thoreau every night and did his laundry while he was off in his woods, or that Jack Kerouac came home to his mom for months at a time so she could nurse him back to health after his adventures. Radical individualism is a lie perpetuated by a culture that is designed for patriarchy, white supremacy, and capitalism. And so many of us have bought into the ways these systems insidiously lead us to deny ourselves and one another. In our current social and political situation, being inclusive is taking on a whole new frame. It's not simply welcoming someone at the door with a smile or restructuring our language to include people of other genders. Preemptive radical inclusion means that we constantly work to increase our ability to ensure that everyone's needs are being met, even as those needs may be changing. Even as those needs are under continuing and increasing assault from those who would deny human rights to some people, who would limit or ban the full range of reproductive health options, would ban learning about the work of Black scholars, amazing Black scholars, or deny medical care to trans people. To do this work meaningfully, to develop beloved community in which all of us really means all of us, we must choose not to believe everything we think, to check our thoughts to determine when there are beliefs masquerading as fact, to notice if the words about injustice that come out of our mouths are simply echoing what we were taught early in life, or if they have been changed and meaningfully influenced by those most impacted by the injustices about which we speak. To practice new ways of being and acting as we bend the moral and material arc of the universe towards justice. As the political and social landscape shifts ever more towards fascism, we will have to reach out to one another in new ways. We will have to offer and accept help in different ways. We can live into the reality that all of us actually means all of us. We can, because that's who we are. Unitarian Universalists. We are people who choose to act preemptively to make the world a better place. We do so imperfectly, but within covenant and with commitment. We choose to learn what we need to in order to create an inclusion that moves all of us closer to justice. We can choose to all get free together. If you say amen, I'll know you're going to come with me.